Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Happy Over the Hump Day, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings in Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for June 20th, 2012, episode 428. Is that really true? I've sat with you that long. This episode is brought to you by Back on Track. Good morning, Horse World.
Big Wednesday, the day you face your own biggest challenge, the day you risk it all, the day you either distinguish yourself or fade into the crowd.
Hang on, we're hitching a ride.
Daddy, I want another pony.
I put 40 hours in this weekend, man, it's only Wednesday. I've been cutting this damn heat all day long, there's got to be another way. So I pick up my guitar and I ride a song. Everybody.
You know, when you think for a second that you're too small or you can't make a difference in the world or, you know, you're small in size or small in just you're feeling small, you can make a difference. You can make changes. And I'll tell you why. Because have you ever been in a room with one mosquito? That is what I'm going through right now. There's one mosquito in my office, and the sucker has bit me 57 times, and I'm standing here swatting it. It's driving me crazy.
That and one bee in the car. All it takes is one bee in the car, and you can have a chain accident that kills 10 people.
The quickest way to wreck my car is have a bee in it. You're exactly right. But just to be small, just know that you can have a voice, and you can make a difference, because just one little mosquito can just wreck somebody's day.
And that bee in the car, the bee comes in, you have the window cracked open about an eighth of an inch, and the bee comes right in through there, and then you open all the windows to get him the heck out, and he doesn't leave. You've got these huge wide windows open on every window. You open all four because you're trying to get rid of him while trying not to wreck the car and kill the child that's running across the street on the bike. No, you can't get rid of him. He won't leave then.
No, absolutely not. So just know that if you hear a swatting or a screaming or the microphone getting knocked over or spilling coffee, it's because I'm trying to get the stupid mosquito. But at any rate, everybody, please, thank you for joining us. We've got some, you know, we've got a great show, but we've also got some great news coming up. There's like three or four kind of big stories, and yet again, last night, I stayed up late to watch it, and I was not disappointed because Stephen Colbert talked dressage again. Not dressage, dressage. So we're going to hear that coming up. We have to replay that without a doubt, and we're also going to hear from Peter Moody, but Jennifer's going to tell us what is on the rest of today's show.
On today's Back on Track Wednesday edition, Glenn's crappy list makes an appearance thanks to an astute listener on a job hunt, and the United States Hunter Jumper Association's over-caffeinated cute as a button Carry Vaught is back again, this time with an overview of the USHJA's trainer certification program. And being Wednesday and all, listen in as Michelle and Dr. Jones work together to manifest our deepest unfounded fears about natural disasters. And happy ice cream Sunday, everyone.
Wow, ice cream Sunday day. That sounds good.
And there's no calories because it's a national day, so it doesn't count.
Okay,
that's good.
Fine to hear that. My Daily Winnie goes out to Wendy Ying of the Driving Radio Show, and I will tell you why, Jamie. And you're going to be very, very jealous. And the reason you're going to be so jealous is I know you are a Harry Potter fan, just like Jennifer and I. And guess what Wendy brought us yesterday? She brought us presents. She
Can you let me guess? Okay, if it's Harry Potter related, she brought you that magic wand you've always wanted. Yes?
I have not any magic wand, Jamie Jennings. I have Dumbledore's magic wand.
Oh, my God, I was right?
Sure. I am now holding it in my hand. I could kill that mosquito with a spell all the way from Florida if I really wanted to. But for comedy's sake, I might just let him live for a little while longer.
Thanks.
Dumbledore's magic wand. Now, I didn't get the book with the spells yet. I got to get that, or it's not much good, because I've been waving it and pointing it at everything that moves and nothing's happening. But she said that she didn't buy me the book with the spells. So now I got to go back to Universal Studios, Harry Potter World, and I got to buy the book with the spells to go with the wand. But I have the wand. Jennifer, tell Jamie why she is going to be jealous of what you received from the wonderful Wendy.
Because I know where... Well, she drank it on the way.
Oh, bummer.
I'll have to go to Harry Potter World and get my own butterbeer. But I know where everybody belongs now because I got a sorting hat. I'm so psyched.
She got it. She does. She looks good, and it will and post it. She got a sorting hat. It looks great on Jennifer.
I just found online?
What?
I found... Find Your Hogwarts House, the Harry Potter Sorting Hat Personality Test.
Oh, that's awesome.
I'm going to take
it. Well, you can totally see whether the sorting hat was right or the computer is right. I think I've taken that test, and I do think I was in Gryffindor, but I think they make everybody in Gryffindor because that's where everybody wants to be. Nobody wants to be in Hufflepuff. Who cares about Hufflepuff? They're lame. They just do a lot of work. I don't want to be in Hufflepuff, and I'm not bad enough to be in Slytherin, so I'm going to go with Gryffindor. There you go.
I kind of figured that Wendy got her the sorting hat because Jennifer wanted it so that she could sort me out of this house into a different house. But they say that it wasn't a conspiracy, and that's in fact not. But see, I figure I can countermand to the sorting hat with a spell with Dumbledore's wand, which I am now waving at my computer screen and bound to break anytime soon, really soon.
If she goes back to where you to what is it, Diagon Alley? If she, God, I'm such a nerd. If she goes back to Diagon Alley,
you know that you're really a nerd.
I would like her to pick me up an invisibility cloak because that seems that or a broom that flies. Either one of those things would be fine with me.
I'll let her know. I'll let her know what you need. But thank you to Wendy for bringing us gifts yesterday. We really appreciate it. It's fun.
Well, I would like to send a Daily Winnie out to the Aussies. How in Australia do they have such amazing eventers? So much so that two of their most amazing eventers came to the United States with Boyd Martin and Philip Sutton. But if you go look at the Australian Olympic eventing team, it has been announced. And you got Andrew Hoy and Rutherglen. You've got Chris Burton and Holstein Park Leilani. And you've got Shane Rose and Torres. And then how sweet is this? And this is going to be just another awesome equestrian story for the Olympics. Clayton Fredericks and his wife, Lucinda Fredericks, both made the Olympic eventing team. Congratulations to them. That is just awesome. Husband and wife, again, it's like David O'Connor and Karen O'Connor being on the team together. Oh, my God, it's awesome. So Clayton and Vendigo and Lucinda and Flying Finish have made the Olympic team. So this is for them.
How many times has happened, husband and wife, on an Olympic team? That can have happened often.
Well, let me just tell you that the only sport where men and women compete as equals is equestrian. So how many times, I mean, besides the O'Connors, I can't think of a married couple that competed at that high of a level. Can you?
No. Now, they could compete on the same team, just in different sports, I guess.
Well, yeah, I mean, but dressage riders don't typically marry show jumpers. It just doesn't happen. So stick with your own kind. Although, look at Boyd Martin and his wife. She's a dressage rider and he's an adventurer.
Yeah.
So what do I know? I would also like to point out sad news for the Argentinian Olympic team, because there will be no Argentinian Olympic team. Sadly, the one Argentinian eventer, and by the way, he is the hottest eventer on the planet. His name is Jose Ortelli. Do you remember me posting a picture of him for the World Hottest Horseman? Oh, my God.
Reese Coffler-Sanfield, now hosting the Dressage Show, was his coach during the World Equestrian Games.
Oh, my God. I thought she was dating him before she got married. I was going to be so jealous. yes, Jose was unfortunately eliminated in Germany at Lemulen. So, sadly, there will be no Argentinian Olympic team. However, this goes out to the Irish, because there's no Argentinian team, the Irish are now going to be able to compete in the games, and they have announced their short list, and they're going to have their final five determined by July 2nd. God, I love the horses. Oh, just awesome. The Olympics, I love the Summer Olympic Games. I will be glued to my television, and I will be yelling at it, because usually there's not enough equestrian, or hardly any. Who cares about gymnastics? I just don't care about 12-year-old girls that are doing flips. I'm over it. I want to see the horses. And they never show it, and we have some stupid thing like handball or water polo. Nobody wants to watch water polo except for the parents of the water polo players. So what I'm trying to say is I need more equestrian eventing and equestrian sports in the Olympics, and I think that we might have it this year. I think that with the whole Boyd Martin story, I think with Clayton and Lucinda, married couple doing the Olympics, and none other than our friend Rafalka. By the way,
don't forget, I saw 100 articles today on Zara Phillips, too. So, the queen's granddaughter.
Don't forget
that.
I've got some news stories about her as well. So, between all this, I think we're going to see a lot more of the equestrian sports, mostly probably dressage, because, oh my God, Stephen Colbert, yet again, last night, it was fantastic.
Yeah, we're going to hear that in just a minute. Let me mention the chat room first. We have the chat room is now open. If you want to go in and chat with other listeners during the show, you can do so by going to blogtalkradio.com and just clicking on the Horses in the Morning link, and you'll find the chat room on that page that pops up. You also can you'll listen to the show right from there as well. I also posted that on our Facebook page at Horses in the Morning. And don't forget also that Equity Manufacturing is sponsoring Really Bad Ads this week with a Flex and Fork to the winner. So that's the Flex and Fork. That's the manure fork that Aubrey loves, our listener, that Jennifer and I use every day, that Jamie uses, that Helena uses. We all love this thing. It's the Flex and Fork manure fork. It's the strongest, best, most flexible manure fork ever. By the way, Joseph, who owns Equity Manufacturing, heard the segment last week we did with Aubrey about the Flex and Fork and the flicking. He said, geez, I forgot to mention anti-flicking. And I said, well, I hadn't heard that word in a while, too. But everybody knows exactly what she meant. So you'll win a Flex and Fork if you send in the best Really Bad Ad this week. So get it into Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. And you can find more out about the Flex and Fork and the Shake and Fork at equitymfg.com. Colbert, he just couldn't let it go, could he?
Well, I mean, we being horse people.
Wait a minute. We're pronouncing it wrong. We have to stop right here. According to Brian O'Connor, it's Colbert. So.
Oh, that's right. It's Colbert and it's dressage, because you'll hear that coming up in this thing. It's about 7 minutes long, but it's totally worth sticking around for it. And if you want to see it, we'll post a link to it up on our Facebook page, because the video does go along with it quite nicely. But the fact that he couldn't let it go, because we just handed it to him. I mean, here's a softball. Make fun of us even more.
Yes, then here it is. I'm trying to get it to play here.
Come on, Colbert.
Come on, Colbert. How come when you want something to work, it never does? All right, I got to refresh the page, which means we have to talk a little longer. There's a commercial first.
There's a commercial on the page. Okay, well, let's see here.
Either that or it's being slammed so hard it's just not working right now.
Man, what a bummer. Hey, we've got news about Secretariat. Breaking news about Secretariat.
While I try and get this going.
Huh?
I said, go ahead and tell the Secretariat news while I try and get this going.
Well, Secretariat was the record holder time-wise for the Kentucky Derby and for the Belmont, and was not the record holder for the fastest Preakness. Well, it was some sort of debacle with the timers, and the official time was different than a bunch of clockers around. Well, Penny Chenery totally went to a special hearing and petitioned the Preakness and the Maryland Racing Commission to change the time to the fastest time because that's what the clockers had. And yesterday it was passed. She said, it's a big day. She said, I didn't know if it was appropriate to cheer, but I couldn't help myself because for more than 2 hours, the Racing Commission heard testimony backed by technology to prove Secretariat's time was actually faster than the Preakness record set by Tank's Prospect in 1985 and also matched Louis Couture's in 1996 and Curlin in 1997. So he now has the fastest Preakness, the fastest Derby, and the fastest Belmont. They say justice was served. The Secretariat team made a compelling case that he ran the race in 153 flat and added the Preakness record to his resume. It's terrific news for Ms. Chenery, who has been diligent in her fight for nearly 40 years, and it's good for the entire sport of horse racing. So congratulations to the Chenerys and everybody associated with Secretariat.
Here it is, 40 years late. Hardly seems like enough, does it?
God, that was 40 years ago. That's crazy.
I know. Isn't that weird? You know, when you did the opener today, you said episode 428. That's not what struck me. What struck me was June 20th. It's like, holy cow, the year's half over. That's what struck me in that one. And you know what? I woke up the other day. I got to tell you, Jamie, I woke up the other day and I went, oh, you know, summer's going to be half over soon and winter's going to be coming. And then I said to myself, I don't have to worry about that anymore.
Bring on the winter.
I was like, I can ride my bike on Christmas Day. We can ride our horses on Christmas Day. It was like, woohoo.
Okay, well, you know how mad like Robert in Minnesota is and Lisa in Wisconsin is and all of our friends up north, they hate us right now.
I know.
But we hate them right now, so it works out.
All right, so actually, you know, they're having a heat wave up there. It's cooler in Florida right now than it is in Lexington, Kentucky, where we moved from.
For a day. Yeah.
I had to reboot my computer. So now we're waiting for it to load here.
Oh, Lord.
I know. It's just not working right.
Let's see. What other news do I have? Well, sad news.
Talk some other news.
They found out, remember Amy Tryon passed away in her sleep several weeks ago now, right before Rolex, actually, in April. And they have now got the toxicology reports back, and sadly, she died of an accidental overdose. You know, she had had a recent injury and then, you know, many years of knee and back injuries that forced her recently to cut back from riding. And the toxicology reports show that she died of an acute combined opiate overdose. This is, you know, how many times do we have to see this happen? Like Heath Ledger, I mean, every single person, it just seems like this happens and it's so sad. Please, everybody, please get off the painkillers if you can, and at least don't mix them with anything. The official toxicology tests showed that there was oxycodone and then basically a Benadryl and several different, like there was Valium and lorazepam and temazepam and alprazolam. I don't know what those are, but I know there was Valium, oxycodone, and allergy medicine in her system, plus three other painkiller type varieties. So, you know, I want doctors to start being responsible and look at patient records. I know you guys don't have tons of time, but look at patient records, see what else they're doing, educate the people that you're giving these medications to. It's just so sad that we lost somebody so spectacular so early, and all because she's in pain and took some painkillers. So, you know, I'm so sick of hearing about this kind of story where this happens, and it just, you know, worries me to death. You know, Chad yells at me for taking a Benadryl to go to sleep, and I'm like, honey, it's a quarter of a dose. It doesn't matter. Don't take pills. So it's just tremendously sad, and we, you know, our heart goes out to her husband and kids and everybody in the family. Just sad.
I have it. You want to hear it now?
Oh, thank God. Lighten this up, please. Stephen Colbert, take us away.
Get in this election because Romney is surging thanks in part to his new secret weapon. Longtime viewers know that every year I declare a sport of the summer. Last year, it was the elegant art of canoe dancing. Yes, canoe dancing, all the drama of Broadway with the excitement of drowning. Well, folks, last week, I declared that this year's sport of the summer will be dressage or horse ballet. Next year, who knows, perhaps canoe dressage. But for now, this is our new national pastime, and it's as American as baseball, except in baseball, there is slightly more horse testosterone. And, folks, our future first family
that was funny.
Is already the first family of dressage. The Romneys are the proud owners of a champion Oldenburg mare named Rafalka.
Rafalka doing the pee-off right now.
There is no better way to dispel the myth that Romney is a detached patrician elite than competitive horse prancing. I mean, it's basically NASCAR in a velvet top hat. This weekend, Rafalka was vying for the Olympic team. So last week, I gave Rafalka the Colbert bump to push her over the top and onto the London Games. Well, hold on to your Lippens honors, folks, because the trials are...
Could he mispronounce any more things in this whole thing?
Over, and Rafalka has made the Olympic team. Yes! Eat it, all you naysayers. Jimmy, crank up the jockey jams.
Showing dressage now.
And only the tee off. That's all they show.
Now Colbert is in his horse head and his horse hooves. Rather disturbing, actually.
That's dancing in a horse costume.
The fact that you can buy those is disturbing.
For the record, incidentally, I am available to stud. Nation.
He just stopped started
laughing.
Kind
of hard to breathe in there. Mason, this is a great day for America, but it puts enormous pressure on the athlete. If Rafalka wins, we can see her face on a box of Wheaties. If she loses, on a bottle of Elmer's. And the huge part, sad, but it's true.
That's a cheap shot.
And the huge part I played here did not go unnoticed by none other than Brian O'Connor, the voice of dressage.
First of all, we'd like to put a big shout-out to Mr. Steve Colbert. We are very pleased that you were able to give us a wonderful prep for our national championship. We have a great response from the wonderful and outstanding fans of Dressage, or Dressage USA, at the national championships here at Gladstone, New Jersey.
Oh, that's embarrassing. I've been pronouncing it dressage. Evidently, it's dressage. Thank you, Brian, for that message. And folks, to thank me for the Colbert bump, Ann Romney and the United States Equestrian Federation made me this video using my contribution to dressage, Budweiser and red foam fingers.
And they showed some good video, not the embarrassing one, thank God.
Yeah, with all those bottles of Bud, and nobody has one open. None. Zero.
No, not one.
I'm going to pause it right there for a second. And the other thing I didn't notice till in this video, and I don't know if you had, they highlighted in this video, was that Ann Romney was standing right there in the middle of all of it. I didn't notice that.
Yeah, they put a little like light circle around her, so you could see that was her. Yeah, she was there. She was cheering. She had the Bud. She had the foam finger. Probably was not open, but whatever. Doesn't matter.
I have created a new dressage tradition. I'm going to be as famous as Viscount Heinrich Fusselbridge, inventor of the fancy trot. Rafalsa is now America's sweetheart. We are all going to love her just as much as Ann Romney does.
I joke that I'm going to have to send her to Betty Ford for addiction to horses.
Good one. I'm right there with you on the addiction.
Yeah, that's true. I'm sorry.
I wish there was some way to shoot horse right into my veins. I mean, sometimes I just want to ride the white pony.
He doesn't get it.
So,
no.
Nation, listen up. We're all in agreement. The Colbert Nation is going to do for Olympic dressage what we did for Olympic speed skating. I will not rest until all the horses are properly equipped. Imagine how much more gracefully...
He shows a picture of them all with speed skating outfits on.
Bad news, folks. After this photo was taken, that horse had to be put down. Somehow it broke all four of its legs. I'm not sure. Not entirely sure what happened. Ann Romney, I am responding to your response and inviting you to respond on my show and teach me dressage. I've already got my fancy velvet hat. I've got my riding crop. And I've got thighs that were born for jodhpurs. We'll be right back.
From the 40s.
Yeah, he was basically showing the Hitler pants.
Yeah, those big old unflattering wide-thighed jodhpurs, as they call them. I just love, like, and so now, obviously, Ann Romney has to go to the Stephen Colbert show. Just has to.
I got to say, though, there must have been 100 articles today. I'm not kidding. All over the place. USA Today, all the major newspapers hit this. But unfortunately, they're all doing it just to beat up on the Romneys for being so rich and in such a rich sport. So I, you know, all of the dressage people in the world should feel better about themselves and go out and just blow a ton of money today because you're apparently all rich.
And what was funny is in the first segment where he talked about in a sport of $1,000 saddles, when this broke online, everybody was like, where can we find a $1,000 dressage saddle? That'd be great.
Yeah. How come I spent four on mine?
Oh, my God, I know. It's like, it's just amazing. So you know, the fact that you can now Google dressage and it comes up with a pop culture reference is just fantastic. And I love the fact that they are, you know, highlighting it on this show. And there's so many articles from non-horse people with photos of this horse and articles written about how it's changing the face. One article is dressage makes a comeback courtesy of the Romneys. And it's not the Romneys that are making a comeback with dressage. It's obviously Stephen Colbert because nobody cared about it when it was just Ann Romney. Now, all of a sudden, because Stephen Colbert, and that's why all the articles are written.
Am I right? It's going to be, yeah, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. No question about it. So we'll see. We'll see if the back and forth continues. Should be fun.
Oh.
It's fun for our show. It gives us great material. Thank you very much, Colbert and the Romneys. You're making it easy for us every morning. Well, let's take a break for our...
Can we get Brian O'Connor, please? Let's find him. I'm Facebook friends with him. I could request him.
Yeah, drop him a note and see if he'll stop by after all of that. Poor Brian. Didn't look so good, that whole thing. let's take a break for our commercial. Back on Track is our sponsor for today, and we certainly appreciate them being part of the show. And then we're coming back to talk a little bit about trainer certification. in another one of the wealthy sports.
Back on Track is a revolutionary line of pain relief products for horses and humans. Utilizing ancient Chinese experience, modern scientific findings, and skilled textile production, we have developed a line of products made of polyester fabric with ceramic powder melted into the threads. This ceramic-infused fabric reflects body heat as infrared waves, a form of energy that has a documented pain-relieving effect. It can reduce inflammation, ease muscle tension, increase blood circulation, and boost the healing process. Back on Track products can be used to warm up your muscles before exercise or work, thereby reducing the risk of strains or injury. Most importantly, they can also expedite the recovery from established injuries. Our wide range of products for horses includes blankets, coolers, saddle pads, boots, and wraps. We also offer a number of products for humans, including back and knee braces, gloves, bedding, and clothing. Back on Track is used by the top equestrians in the world, including McLean Ward, Stefan Peters, BZ Madden, Michelle Gibson, Margie Engel, and Debbie McDonald, just to name a few.
We've been using the Back on Track products now for approximately 4 years, starting with the leg wrap and the blankets. We've seen and noticed wonderful results from these products. We've no longer used poultice in our barn. The horses come out with much tighter legs, seem to have many less ailments, and the side effects of using poultice are not noticed, obviously, using the Back on Track wraps. Using the blankets, the horses have far less back trouble, far less irritation, allows us to do less veterinary treatments on the horse's joints, as well as chiropractic work, and we really feel that it's been a huge improvement for us and helped us have some great results.
Stefan Peters is one of the best dressage riders in the United States, having represented the United States.
And that's Back on Track products. You can find them at backontrackproducts.com is where you'll find all of their products. Well, it is time for our first guest, Jamie.
Yeah, we've got Carrie Vaught from the USHJA, United States Hunter Jumper Association, to talk to us about their trainer certification program. Good morning, Carrie.
Good morning. How are you guys this morning?
Well, we're fantastic. I got to ask you first, right off the bat, you're part of the Hunter Jumper Association. How jealous is the Hunter Jumper Association now of the Dressage Association?
We're pretty jealous. Actually, last week we all sat together and watched that video clip, and it was interesting. I feel like we have to call him up and get USHJA in on the mix.
I mean, really, it's like, you know, and if they could just show more video than just a horse pee-offing, because it does look kind of silly when they're playing Aruba, Jamaica, Ooh, I Want to Take You, and the horse is standing there trotting in place. Now, there's nothing more fun than riding a pee-off. However, watching it with his kind of whatever spin on it is kind of ridiculous, I must say, but it's entertaining nonetheless.
Yeah, he definitely puts humor in on what us horse people would consider a very serious sport. So it was funny to watch.
You know, usually when we go into the Olympics, the jumping is the thing that has always been the number one billing, and then eventing and dressage are sort of behind that. This year, you guys are just behind the eight ball. You're going to be last place because, first of all, we have dressage, which is now the number one sport in the world. And then we have Zara Phillips, who's being covered because of her grandmother, just happens to be somebody, you know, important. You guys are just left behind this year.
I know. I don't know what's going on. I'll have to email all those Olympians and tell them to get on it.
I know. One of them needs to do something really stupid or wacky. This will be me.
And then call Stephen Colbert.
Yes, exactly.
What can we do with the jumpers in the Olympics? Like, can we find some ringer to come through, like, maybe Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt are like show jumpers, and we could qualify them. That would be a big story, something like that. Like,
I think
too.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that'd be awesome. You know,
I'll
it'd be awesome. Call. You know, it'd be awesome to see Brad Pitt in riding pants.
That would be pretty amazing.
I'm totally off track here. Sorry, Carrie.
No, let's keep talking about this. I like this.
Somehow my brain just keeps going when my mouth should stop. Sorry about that. So we'll get back to the Brad Pitt thing. Just call me. We can Photoshop some stuff and at least get
of
some
course.
Ideas. So talk to me about what the trainer certification program is.
Yeah, it's a volunteer certification program. It's kind of self-explanatory for trainers in the United States who use the American Hunter-Jumper Forward Riding System. And it's a way for them to showcase their talent as trainers and get new clients. One of the benefits is actually posting their information and resume on our website. We have a certified trainers directory. So that is available to the public. So new clients can come in. Current clients can determine the trainers, their skill levels and their experience and expertise. Some other benefits of the program are potential eligibility, for insurance premium discounts through Markel, which is the sponsor of our program.
Wow. Okay. So let's back up a little bit. What is the American Hunter Jumper Forward Riding System?
It is the... The system that Americans use, I sound silly saying this, but kind of self-explanatory. It's the way that Americans are trained to ride hunters and jumpers. I don't know, to be honest, how it differs from the European style of riding as far as putting that into words and defining it, but you can tell that Americans do ride a little bit different than Europeans. It's the way that we teach our American riders to ride.
You know what? It's because American riders have the fear of George Morris in their bones somewhere. My God. Okay, so that's basically the name of the system that people in America use. Got it. Okay.
Yes.
So they have to kind of stay under the umbrella of these techniques and teaching methods and training goals, and then does it include, is it just riding, or is it tacking and grooming and stable management and that kind of stuff?
The trainers going through this program must have a comprehensive knowledge of everything from, like what you're saying, tacking and grooming and horsemanship, to riding and teaching and training. So it's really everything under the sun. Right now the program is only a couple years old. I think it began in late 2009. So it's pretty new, and we are encompassing as many different types of levels of trainers as possible. So it's not just for elite trainers taking students to AA shows and big finals. It's also for more local trainers who are starting those kids who may or may not end up in those AA shows and big finals classes.
Gotcha. You know, and I think that this is really important because, and I don't want to bag on a sport or anything like that, but I find that if you say that you train dressage, you have knowledge of it, because nobody can explain the connection and the leggy A's and all this kind of stuff. Like, nobody can be a backyard dressage trainer, really, I mean, for the most part. And then eventers, I find that you have to really know about the sport to be able to teach it, just like dressage. But I find that in the hunter-jumper world, hunters being the most particular, it's almost like anybody can get out there and try to teach it, and it's not, and they don't teach it the safest way possible. That at least has been my experience. I think that this is probably the most needed in the hunter jumper world, and I'm glad you guys are putting it together, because everybody's like, oh yeah, I just ride hunters because they go out and they jump fences, and whether they jump them safely or not is the question. And oh yeah, this horse, you know, I teach hunter jumper lessons, and like some of my students that I have now, unfortunately, have been to places. One of my teenagers, she's like, yeah, I've been riding for 2 years, and I got on this horse, and the reason she came to me was she had a previous trainer who put her on a 3-year-old thoroughbred and was out there jumping fences, and she's like, well, I fell off the first 8 times. And I'm like, what? Holy cow, like, I think it needs regulation, and I really hope that this, is it starting to take off? I know that was a, like, long-winded, ridiculous kind of statement question, but do you agree, and is it starting to take off?
I do agree, and it is starting to take off. One of the requirements of this program is to be a professional. In the hunter-jumper world, professional is defined as getting money to teach or train. So, in theory, anybody could be a professional. So the trainer certification program is trying to bring in those professionals who have a solid background of horsemanship knowledge, teaching ethics and professionalism and safety. Those are some big components that they're focusing on this year, and they have been in the past, but they're really tightening down on making sure that safe trainers with a good history of professionalism and experience are in this program.
I think that this is very overdue, and I applaud you guys for getting involved. Are you finding that the hunter jumper world and trainers are embracing this extra education and extra certification, or are they kind of like, and be honest with me here, because I could see a lot of hunter jumper trainers or any type of horse trainers going, I'm not going to get certified. I do what I do fine. Are they jumping on board? Like, this is a great idea. I want to further my education.
We get a mixture of feedback. For the most part, for me personally, I do receive a lot of positive feedback. But there are some skeptic trainers out there who call and they just simply want to know what it will do for them. There are some trainers who've been in the business for many, many years, and they don't necessarily need new clients. So as far as them being posted on the certified trainer directory, it's not a huge benefit to them because they're not seeking new clients. And their career is well underway, and so they don't need to boost it necessarily. And for those trainers, if they're not interested in it, that's completely fine. That's one of the good things about this being a volunteer program at this time is you don't have to join it. But if you see the benefit for yourself and for the industry, then definitely take a look at it. One of the requirements is continuing education, which personally I feel that every trainer should take part of, some
Amen.
Level of continuing education. If you've been teaching for 20 years and haven't necessarily been to a clinic to learn something in the past 20 years, maybe now's a good time to take a look at the TCP clinics or trainer symposiums. This summer, we're launching an online educational option to join equestriancoach.com and watch some videos. So anything like that will help you develop as a trainer, even if you've been teaching for decades.
Well, and I think that those trainers, and Jennifer just said the same thing to me and typed it to me, those trainers are, you know, and you can encourage them to do it because they're setting an example for
yeah.
other trainers. Like, I know that around here there's an eventing certification, and the coach that I ride with is certified, and she's the highest level certified, and there's only like 3 actual certified trainers in the area that teach eventing, and to see that next to their name as somebody who's going to pay them to teach me, I think it's really important, and I do think that they set a really good example for the rest of the trainers out there going, hey, you know what, you got to go do this, we did it, and we're the big names around here.
Yes, I agree. My trainer is actually a certified trainer with the Hunter Jumper Association. So it's nice to know that I'm with somebody who continues for education and who has that required set of knowledge and skills and experience.
Well, and so when the trainer says to you, what's in it for me, what do you tell them?
I give them some of the benefits, such as being listed on the directory, the insurance discounts, and just let them know that it, like, I mean, really, you said it all, that it sets a precedent for other trainers. It shows that it is something worthwhile. It makes them go through that continuing education. It's a requirement. So it forces them to continue learning about the industry. The hunter jumper industry typically is very set in tradition, but there are certain things that change. Safety, for example, helmets 20, 30 years ago were not required, they weren't even thought of.
They would wear a beret or something, you know.
Yeah. So things like that, just going through the continuing education and seeing these small changes in safety and ethics and some styles of riding throughout the many years of the hunter jumper industry is important for trainers to kind of keep on top of.
Well, and it's you're never too old to learn and
that is
to continue to further. You know, I find that, yes, there's a continuing set of traditions, but I find that especially the hunters, and the reason I can talk hunters is because I rode them for 20 years, and I think that a big reason for the tradition is because, you know, it's kind of cyclical as far as the fashion goes and the different techniques go, and to have kind of all of those under your belt and to be able to keep up with everything, because I find that even though it's traditional, hunters are changing all the time. As far as what people are looking for and what kind of horse you need, you know, that kind of stuff seems to change all the time. And is this an inexpensive or expensive thing to be able to learn all this and to get certified?
Is it expensive? It definitely is not free. As far as the fees are concerned, there's the application fee. That's the first step of applying and submitting your application and documents. That is $100, and it includes the price of the TCP manual, which is a pretty comprehensive book that's a study guide for an exam that the trainer would take later on in the program process. If the trainer's application is approved by the TCP committee, who meets three times a year, then there is an exam certification fee of $225. But that would be due maybe a few months after they submit their application. So these fees are spread out a little bit. Attending a TCP clinic can be maybe $100 or $200 for the event. And then some trainers do have to travel. So it could get a little bit expensive, which is why we are launching this online video option. For a half price of subscription to Equestrian Coach, the trainer can watch this from their own home. They don't have to worry about airfare or taking a few days off of teaching lessons. So we're trying to find ways to make this program more affordable and accessible for the trainers.
I love it. And, you know, it just might pay for itself depending on what discounts these trainers get from the insurance company, because I know trainer insurance is very expensive. I mean,
yeah,
and rightfully so, because it's kind of a scary thing to do, you know, as far as for an insurance company going, okay, you're somebody I don't know and I don't know anything about you and you want me to back you. Yeah, it's going to cost you. But when the insurance companies know that you are certified and that you have education and you have this and that, then, you know, it takes probably a little bit of a load off as a financial, you know, I don't know what the word is I'm looking for, but it gives them a better idea of who you are and that maybe you're a little bit safer.
Yeah, definitely. And the other big benefit financially could be with them being listed on the certified trainer directory, bringing in new clients. This is promotion for the trainers as business people. And there are people that call periodically asking for a trainer in the area, and I always direct them to the certified trainer directory. They can search in their zone or in their state by the trainer's name and find someone who meets their expectations as a rider in their area.
Well, before we let you go, Carrie, I got to say that I've been spending this time while you guys have been talking about this neat program trying to figure out a marketing spin for the Hunter Jumper Association to compete with dressage. And I've come up with it because I got a tweet a couple days ago from a little girl named Reed Kessler who posted on there, "Got a call from George. I made the team. There's too many people to thank. This is without a doubt the greatest day of my life. 19 years old, the youngest rider in history to be going to the Olympics."
Yes, it's very, very exciting. I actually got to see her ride. She was in Kentucky a few weeks ago competing for an Olympic observation event. She's a phenomenal rider, and it's incredible that she's so young with so little experience compared to the other Olympians.
So between Zara, between the Romney's horse, and between Reed Kessler, I'm predicting that Equestrian is going to dominate the Olympic coverage this year on all mainstream media.
I think that is great.
NBC is bound to at least provide 20 minutes instead of 10 minutes of coverage this year.
Jennifer, make sure your husband does not hold his breath waiting for it, because we will be short a co-host.
Thank you, Carrie, for joining us. We appreciate it and for putting up with us.
Not a problem. Bye. Thanks, guys.
All
Thank
right.
You.
Thank you. It's ushja.org is the website. Well, that's very interesting stuff. And, you know, one of the things that Reese talks about all the time now on the dressage show is the fact that she is a certified trainer and how important that has become in the dressage world. So maybe it's making its way to the other sides of the fence as well. Being
well,
that dressage is
eventing.
So important and everything.
I know. Well, it definitely is an eventing as well, doing the certified training. So, I mean, that's what I looked for when I was looking for a coach. So, It needs to be the norm rather than, oh, somebody's actually certified? What? it needs to be part of the whole thing.
Well, I'll tell you what, when you're living in Florida, Jamie, not only do you have heat, but when you're living in the part of Florida that we're living in, which is under these big, beautiful live oak trees, and you put up horse fencing and you put your horse out under those big, beautiful live oak trees that have been around for hundreds of years, you discover that you need some pretty good fencing. Now, we put up the polytape fencing from Field Guardian, and one of the reasons that we chose that is because Jennifer did a lot of research, and she found that the Field Guardian fencing is tough and durable. Well, we've been able to test that a couple times now, because guess what live oak trees do on a regular basis?
I don't know.
They throw up branches, large branches, on a regular basis. And Jennifer, you have to come off of mute. But Jennifer came in the other day and said, I am so impressed with our fence because we had another big branch fall on our fence. And what happened?
The fence stayed up. Yay!
It just put a little ding in it. It wasn't even like, we didn't have to do any repairs. The insulators didn't break or anything. And this was a good five inch branch that fell down a good distance. But this is like the second or third time now that we've had branches fall on this fence, and it has just stayed up. So if you're looking for an electric polytape fence that for your house or your farm or for whatever reason, for your horses or just to divide a wooden fence paddock, then look to Field Guardian first. You can just go to fieldguardian.com. You can find all the choices over there. It's affordable, and it's good stuff. It really does work. And one of the other cool things is if you just send them a little diagram, just hand-draw a diagram with the everything on it, where your gates are and the distances and everything, they will tell you exactly what you need. And that's exactly what they did with us. So we give the stamp of approval to a Field Guardian. Now, we did witness Beaker the other day, you know, deciding to test the fence. He just accidentally put his nose against it. And we can also tell you that this fence does work very well. It did shock him, and he was not happy about it.
Well, I got a couple comments to make here, because what I'm listening to is, dear God, man, get out there and trim your trees. You know? That's the first thing I think of when you're like, oh, all these branches keep falling down. That's a you problem, okay?
Well, considering we've only been here for about 2 months, I didn't know a darn thing about live oak trees, and now we do. Yes, some trimming is going to be happening, but I'll tell you what, when you get up into the tops of these live oak trees, you can barely get anything up there to even trim those trees.
There's no self-trimming here. You have to hire a professional.
Thank you, Jen. Yeah. Thank you. This is not a you job. This is you're going to have to pay money for somebody to come and trim your trees. That's the first thing. The second thing is, you said that Beaker touched the electric fence and was reminded that it was live, right?
Yes.
Okay. I touch my electric fence pretty much about 3 times a day, and it really sucks. And do you not shock yourself all the time on yours?
No, we're very careful, because I'll tell you what, you with the charger they sent us, you touch this fence, it's a little different than what we used to have our charger 25 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. I heard it. I was in the house, and the house is, what would you say, 20 yards from the paddock?
Yep.
And what he was hanging his head over the fence, and he fell asleep, is what happened.
Oh, God.
I heard it tick 20 yards away when it shot him.
From in the house. Holy cow.
From in the house.
Okay. Mine is just a little solar powered. I can't believe they stay in. But if I walk underneath it, because I'll just go to cut through instead of opening, blah, blah, blah. I just climb underneath it. And seriously, about 4 times a day, it shocks me on the back. And I hate that. And I understand why a 1,200-pound animal doesn't challenge it, just because it's not worth it.
No, it's not worth it. And it, but you think, you know, Beaker's so dumb that way, he will actually stick his head out over it and fall asleep. You think after you've done that a few times and gotten shocked, you wouldn't stick your head over it to fall asleep anymore. You would change your pattern of behavior. But no.
Well, wait a minute. Let's back up a little bit, Glenn. Human being versus horse. We all know pretty much that human beings are way more intelligent than a horse. And we now know, because Jamie just told us, she doesn't change her behavior to keep him in shock. Why would a horse?
You make a good point. I do try to crouch down a little bit, but sometimes, you know, you just your body doesn't respond when you're in your 30s as much as you think it would, and yeah, whatever. So anyway, it's a good fence. Get the fence if you need it. I
FieldGuardian.com.
Yeah, there you go. That was a commercial, by the way, that we just did. Sort of. Sorry, guys. Okay, well, let's play this song, because we've got the horse.com coming up, and I still have some breaking news for you.
Well, all right, I forgot. I don't have a song uploaded because I totally forgot that this morning. So will Girls and Horses do?
Yeah. And then Aubrey doesn't have to hang up.
Yeah, yeah. Well, she talks about him, dreams about him, thinks about him all the time. She's got to have him, be lost without him. You can see it in her eyes. What is it? What is it with girls and horses? She said, now when I was a young girl, they were my whole world. They were my one safe place. Now
Well, of course, that was Templeton Thompson and Girls and Horses. You can find all of her music at templetonthompson.com. You're listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenda Geek here with Jamie Jennings, and Coach Jen is in the producer chair. This show is brought to you by Back on Track Products. You can find all of their terrific products at products.com. Well, we are going to be getting to the horse and Dr. Jones on disasters. And, of course, we live in Florida now, so I've got to tell you, though, since we've lived here, the weather's been absolutely beautiful. But we are in hurricane season, and we're bound to see some of those coming up here very shortly. Now, before we get to them, there was a couple of stories that we wanted to get to. One was that John Velasquez left the hospital. We talked about him getting hurt. So he's now out of the hospital, Jamie?
Yeah, well, of course, he's the one who rode Union Rags to victory at the Belmont. And then, sadly, he was on a horse this past weekend that broke down. And so he suffered a pretty bad fall. Broke his collarbone, and that was the initial news story, was that he broke his collarbone, and we were like, oh, he'll be riding in no time. Well, he's been in the hospital since then for at least 3 days, and oh my God, this mosquito is driving me crazy. Sorry.
Let me get my wand out.
Get your wand out and get rid of it. I swear, there must be more than one, because dear God, anyway. So it was apparently really a bad fall, because what we didn't hear initially was he actually suffered a traumatic blow to his kidney. So I don't know if he got stepped on or what, but he broke his collarbone and had kidney damage. And it's expected to heal in the next 2 weeks. So I don't know if he'll be on a horse. You know, these jockeys are usually oh so tough, but it doesn't sound like he needs to be getting back in the saddle. But he's actually gone home, so I guess things are looking a little bit better. Oh, did we lose Glenn? Did you lose me? Somebody on chat, type if you can hear me, because I don't hear anybody. And Jennifer is out making a phone call. And it's now apparently my show. The next thing is Zara Phillips.
Not so fast there, Jenny.
Oh, dang it, he's back. And you're a little hot, so just be careful with your volume there.
Okay.
Just to let you know about Zara Phillips, you know, we talked about her a little bit earlier. She's going to definitely be making the headlines, and she continues to. And this is awesome. Okay, she's like, you know, pretty much like a princess. She's a queen's granddaughter. She has confirmed that she is going to stay in the Olympians Athletes Village when she competes for the eventing team. And the Athletes Village, I mean, I'm sure it's nice, but it's pretty much like dorms. That's the way it was in Atlanta. It was actually college dorms was the Olympic Village. And she has said that she will mix with the other athletes and she will have no extra security. She's just going to rely on the Olympic security. She's not going to be a princess. That's what I like about her. She's so real. She's so down to earth.
Yeah, but
and she's like,
I don't know. I don't know if it was a great idea to go announcing that, though. Okay, go ahead and do that. But don't, you know, put articles all over the world saying I'm not going to have any extra security. That might not have been a brighter move.
I think she probably, you know, discussed it with somebody and somebody broke the story and they interviewed her about it. I don't see her holding, hello, everybody, please gather around. I would have no added security. I don't think she did that. But she did say, I'd rather, you know, and this is like what she said. She's like, I'd rather get on with my competition than go to the opening ceremony. It will be great to be a part of the Olympics and get the atmosphere and the buzz of being a part of it. But she just wants to compete. She just kind of wants to be left alone, like not treated different. She said she's massively excited and honored. She's keeping fingers crossed because they still got a few weeks to go. And you know what horses are like. And, you know, the last Olympic Games she missed because her last horse got hurt right in front of it. So kind of broken dreams there. And, you know, she just seems so down to earth and so put together. And is just like, you know, I'm staying in the village. I'm not staying in the palace, whatever. She's awesome.
All right. It is time for the weekly health report with the horse.com.
Time for the weekly health report from the horse.
He just said that.
Fantastic information and their attempt to ruin Glenn's lunch every week.
Say it again, for fun. And now it's time for the weekly health report. Dr. Jones and Michelle are with us.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Now we've all three said it. It's official. Darn it.
That it's good or that it's morning?
No, that is
the horse health report.
Yeah, it's official now.
I'm a little slow this morning.
Yeah, catch up here, Michelle. Jeez, wake up.
Oh, my gosh. And I just looked over and realized that my dog snuck into my office, so hopefully she behaves herself for our segment.
That's all right. Jamie has a mosquito in her office. I've been driving crazy all morning. So, you know.
And I have three dogs and a cat in this room with me, as well as the mosquito, plus,
oh, wow.
I think, probably about 25 of his closest friends. So this is fun. This is good.
So you have a whole zoo. Well, hopefully my dog doesn't start barking and then get your dog barking.
Oh, yeah, good point.
She's sleeping, hopefully. Okay, we'll keep our fingers crossed and try to scoot through this while she's asleep. So
Dr. Jones, what do you have in your office? Or don't we want to know?
The usual. You know, dogs, cats, and horses, and the usual. So. I've actually been kicked out of my office right now, so I'm in the library area that Jennifer got to see, and so I've been kicked out of my office temporarily.
Well, and that's even more perfect, because it seems to me that every veterinarian, and probably in your library as well, on the shelf somewhere is a piece of a horse carcass, be it a bone, a hoof, some sort of skeleton. Do you have that in your office or your library?
I don't know. Can Jennifer answer on this one?
Oh, my God, baby. Why did you ask that? She has an entire horse in there. Are you serious? And she knows his name.
No, really?
What is wrong with you people? You vets are crazy. Hey, let's have a dead horse in my office. Awesome. That looks great. Oh, you guys are ridiculous.
Yeah, her skull is on the shelf. Her pelvis is on the shelf. And the rest of her bones are on tables laid out and labeled. And then some of them are in a Rubbermaid getting ready to go to be affixed to her.
I know.
So you have a horse, like pieces of a horse all over your library?
Yeah, she has not been put together. It's just been a timely item and finding the right person to put her together. But I did find somebody, not just going to come up with the money to put her together, but Peggy, my old thoroughbred mare, who used to be the tease mare here, and she was pretty crippled, has some great examples of arthritis that I love to show the clients and the joints.
Whoa. Stop the press. You have not only a horse skeleton in your room. It's your own horse?
It was, yeah. She, at age 26, 27, came down with EPM, and we spinal tapped her and got the confirmation. We treated her for a month. She didn't get any better. We went ahead and treated her for a second month at a higher dose. Halfway through the treatment, she started to colic, and it was a surgical colic, and with EPM, you know, being very ataxic, and 27, we chose euthanasia to be our best answer, which was difficult at the time for me. Very, very difficult. She had been with me for about eight to ten years.
I wanted her to
continue to be part of the practice. So we did a shallow grave and had her biodegraded by the beetles and worms and such. And then dug her back up about a year later and boiled off all the skin that was left.
This is getting weirder.
Yeah.
This is getting worse as you talk. I'm sorry. Oh, Lord.
But
I'm sorry.
I do see the educational piece.
I'm in the library with one of my pets, yes, but she's just not alive. She's deceased. And, she's staring at me right now. Give me a funny smile.
I was expecting you to say, yes, I've got a coffin bone sitting on my shelf so I can explain. No, this is way more than that.
Hold on. Let's start over.
Holding.
We're starting over.
Time for the weekly health report from Horse.com. Fantastic information and their attempt to ruin Glenn's lunch every week.
Good morning. It's so good to have you on the show today.
We're going to talk about disaster
preparedness here in Florida because there's hurricanes coming. Take it away.
Oh, I'm so hurt.
And you're definitely thinking Florida because you're new down there. But I'm up in the Northwest, and I am in wildfire country in the desert. And then there's also areas of flooding and tornadoes. I know in Kentucky you had tornadoes, didn't you, when you were in Lexington?
Yeah.
So, you know, everywhere, anywhere you live, there's something, to plan for with our horses. And in the June issue, we had some great coverage of things to do to keep your horse safe during a natural disaster and how to plan to get through that. And so Dr. Jones is here to talk to us, give us her perspective as a vet on what we can do in case those disasters come up. So, and Aaron, so you, or Dr. Jones, you've been through hurricanes, I'm guessing, down in Florida also.
Oh, yes, ma'am, we have. We definitely have experienced them. I've been here for about almost 20 years, and I think 2004 rings true to a lot of people here in Florida because we had three of them come straight across Central Florida every 2 weeks. There was one in August, 2 weeks later, Labor Day weekend, 2 weeks later, mid-September. And we were pretty tired of having boarded up windows and such. So, yeah, we're no strangers to it.
Yeah. So as a vet, what is the number one thing that you want your clients to know about natural disasters and getting prepared for those?
I guess you hit the key word, prepared. The thing I think that most people don't think about when they purchase horses, and I think is very pertinent that you should have in mind, is any emergency, you should have transportation. So natural disasters here in Florida, they recommend evacuations of certain areas. How do you evacuate if you don't have trailer, access to a trailer? No one, someone who has a trailer, have not checked your trailer lately. It's got weeds growing underneath it and maybe a vine growing through it, flat tires and such. So that's my big thing, is have an evacuation or an emergency traveling plan, because it may not be an evacuation, but God forbid you get a tornado that comes through the Midwest or a tornado comes through here in Florida, because we are heavy with tornadoes as well, and a piece of the tin roof of your barn flies off and gets into the field and your horse cuts its leg and you need to find a way to get somewhere to get that taken care of. Transportation, I think, is key.
When I worked for a therapeutic riding center, I did the risk management planning for the program that you have to do for accreditation. And one of the big parts of that not only is having that trailer to get the horses out, but then also having a safe place to take them. So how should horse owners go about finding a place to take their horses in case of a disaster or an evacuation?
Most of the people, they go online. This is the experience I've had here in Florida. And at the time, I was able to secure my Peggy in a concrete block barn. So we didn't have to evacuate, but we had people look online to the overnight stays places in Georgia, and they probably flooded those places. Some had friends up there. Some went with friends who had friends, that kind of thing. But those overnight stay places are primo when it comes to taking your horse to a place. And they're, 6 hours away or 8 hours away, and you're going to have to get that far away sometimes in a hurricane situation.
Mm-hmm. Which is why you need as many spots in your trailer as you have horses, because you may not be able to make multiple trips back and forth.
Exactly, exactly. And the commercial haulers get very busy at that time, so you can't just rely on, I'll just hire a commercial hauler. Also, does your horse load? And that's really frustrating in a desperate situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and when you get everyone a little anxious anyway, trying to get anxious horses in trailers, that can not be a great situation if they aren't good at jumping in. So getting our horses evacuated, that's really important. But what if we're in a natural disaster and we have to deal with taking care of our horses without being able to get out or get supplies? And I know we should have food for ourselves, but what about for our horses, feed and water? How much should we have on hand?
Well, they always say to have enough for 4 to 5 days here in the hurricane situation. When you're stocking up on water and such. So the same goes with your horse, and you're thinking, well, how am I going to have that? They drink, up to 10 gallons a day, and so you're thinking that times 5 days, that's 50 gallons for one horse. So what a lot of people will do is they'll just start filling up those big 50-gallon drums. And I've seen it in barns and hurricanes. The concrete barn my mare was at, she had like 8 to 10 of them in the aisleways, all full with water. Filled with water because, even if we don't get struck directly by a hurricane or the tornado, the outlying storms can knock out the electricity, which knocks out the electricity to your well or your pump, which a lot of people don't think about when they have a well or pump on their land. So you need to have that backup.
I never thought about those big drums, the big plastic ones, because you can buy those for pretty cheap, actually.
Yeah, that's what they use. That's what they use. And they're very reasonable, very, very reasonable. Yeah. And she just pulled them out of her storage shed that she had and just put them all throughout the aisleway because she, you know, closed down the doors and everything. And so they're there readily available if she lost her well, her pump, and she could just dip the water buckets right into it. That's another thing. Those of you that are on automatic waterers, you need to have enough buckets for water as well. So you do need to have those backup water buckets for your automatic waterers that go out.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. I hadn't thought of that at all. So, and it's getting those drums before the emergency is coming up. Not waiting until the weatherman says there's a storm coming, right?
Right.
So what should we have in our first aid kit to take care of our horses if they do get injured?
Well, your basic bandage material is huge because that's what you're going to run into is a lot of cuts and scrapes and stuff. Bandage material, I would say, would be number one. Then you could have your antibiotic-type medicines for any wounds or cuts that are areas where you can't wrap the horse's leg. Those are definitely something necessary. Thermometer, stethoscope, if you know how to use them. If you don't know how to use them, ask your veterinarian. I've showed numerous people where to listen for a heart and take the temperature. It's a rectal temperature, that kind of thing. The sterile saline wash, you can buy it from your vet. You can get some of those from the feed stores. You can get some of them at Walgreens. There are sterile saline sprays they make. Those things will help clean out wounds that will, you know, that they'll sustain. You can even get diapers if you need to act as stops if you're desperate. Any kind of antibacterial solutions, find them at the feed stores. Antibacterial like povidone, chlorhexidine is one of my favorites for antibacterial. And then prescription medicines for your horse. If your horse is on Pergolide and you're getting low, make sure that you don't wait to the last tablet to order it, because if we have a hurricane, transportation of UPS to your vet or to you or even from your farm vet account is going to be closed down. So you need to make sure that you have those prescription meds that your horse is on nonstop available, maybe backup for that. If you have some sort of reason to use bute or on your horse or such, you want to make sure that you have that backup medicine, but talk to your veterinarian about having those medicines available. And then, of course, I always like to have inside or tell the clients to put inside their little first aid kit your veterinarian's phone number, just in case your speed dial's not working or your cells are out or something to that effect and you can get to a land phone. You get their phone number right there inside the first aid kit. Or you went up to Georgia or you went out of state to move the horse. You've got your veterinarian's phone number there handy in the first aid kit.
So you should definitely be ready to have your vet not be able to make it to your horse right away after.
Because if anything, they're triaging. If it's a really bad storm, which the ones here, it was a tornado, went through Ocala. It took out quite a few thoroughbred farms. Big trees went down, a lot of horses got hurt, and they had to triage. They had to pick which horses they were going to see first. So your horse may not be number one, but you're going to have to do something to stop the bleeding or do something to cover up that open, ugly wound or get the debris or dirt out of the wound that the horse has rolled and rubbed into it overnight that you didn't know, that the injury occurred or whatever. So you'll definitely need something to kind of help you out in the meantime, and your vet can give you guidance over the phone while they're trying to get to you.
Yeah, we had
the roads may be closed. Roads may be closed.
Yeah, apparently during that storm, those storms apparently in our neighborhood here with the big live oak trees, another disadvantage is they couldn't get back to our road for a week. Power was out and trees were just down everywhere.
Yeah.
So you have to be ready for not being able to have those experts come help you out. And then in like Katrina, we saw lots of animals, horses, dogs, cats lost without their people. How can we identify our horses so that we can get them back if there is a severe storm or wildfire and they get out?
That's a really great point, Michelle. That's something that you should do well ahead of storm time, storm weather, is get your horse either microchipped or you can do freeze branding, which is a little old-fashioned, but some people still do it. The tattooed lip, if you can read it on your thoroughbred, that'd be fantastic. Make sure you have that tattoo number down, documented somewhere in a hard copy so that you can carry it with you, maybe on your coggins or on other items. But then they also have the new thing out, which is the IID, which is the retinal scan that they're doing. It hasn't picked up a lot of steam, but it's a very good ID remedy. The microchipping is the most common, the most popular, and they have now universal microchipping guns that the USDA and some of the rescue or the animal control groups have or have access to. And it's one gun that reads every single microchip that's made, even European ones. So having your microchip number handy, as I tell my clients, when I administer a microchip into the horse, that microchip number has been serialized to me, Dr. Jones at Florida Equine. I tell them to call the company, set up their own account with their name and number so that when that horse is lost, they can go straight to that number and go straight to the client rather than having to go through me, who might not be able to get to my clinic because I'm either busy or I've got trees down and can't get to my clinic to look at that number that we've got logged in or categorized in our file, and then they finally get to the client's name or number. So being registered through the company is good.
How much will microchipping cost, Dr. Jones?
Oh, it's less than $50. It's very cheap to
do.
Okay. And then to register, some of the companies charge maybe $10 to register, and you can register up to, I don't know, five animals, including your dogs and cats,
okay,
or even eight animals. So it depends on the company that you go with. And the registration is very, very cheap to put your name and number down, and you can put as many pets up to their limit underneath that name and number.
Yeah.
And the other thing people have done here is, and it's very unique, and you might see it in your wildfires because they might think, oh, it's not going to happen in my neighborhood, is they'll take the cattle markers. You can get those at the feed stores, and they'll write their phone number on the side of the horse.
Mm-hmm.
Or they put little tags on a leather, not a nylon, please, a leather halter because it breaks easier if they get caught with it. Leather halter, they'll put little ID tags like you have dog tags on your dog's collar that has your name and number attached to it. The only thing is if the halter's off the horse, then there's still no ID.
Yeah, I keep a big cattle chalk in my kit so that I can write on the side of my horses if a storm or a fire did come through and they had to be let go. I figure that's a good way to find them again or help them find me. I've also heard of people using fingernail polish and painting on the hooves the phone number.
Yeah. On the hooves, but not on the hair, because there have been some products people have used on the hair, and the hair has been, you know, they lose their hair in that area. So be careful what you use on the hair. Those cattle markers are the best ones to use. I carry them in the truck for emergency reasons.
Yeah.
Well, then the fingernail polish would do its job, because then you definitely, it's not going to wash off if it starts raining. It's like a freeze brand.
I was thinking that, too.
The other thing, too, though, is you got to remember that non-horse people won't be comfortable picking up a horse's foot if it's standing in sand, dirt, or debris, or they've got dirt debris
That's
on
true.
That foot. They may not see it.
Yeah. Well, we on thehorse.com, we have an archived webinar that we did recently on identification. And if you just go to thehorse.com and under videos, webinars, and you can you register, and then you can watch the identification webinar that we did. And it covers traditional methods, hot branding, freeze branding, up to this iris scanning, microchipping, all kinds of options for horse owners so that they can find their horses after these kind of things. But let's cross our fingers and horses stay home and safe.
Exactly.
Well, that's terrific.
I've got a first aid kit PDF print off on my website, and anybody can go on there and print it off. It gives them an idea of what they can go to the store and put together.
And that's floridaequine.com.
Yes.
Good.
So I
have
a hurricane preparedness sheet as well, if they're interested.
Oh, good. I'll be printing that off because we have to worry about that now. So I got to print that off too. Next time we need to talk. We don't have time right now, but next time we need to talk about haboobs, because you need to do some research on what Jamie has to do, because she keeps getting blasted with haboobs out there in Phoenix.
What?
Covered haboobs. Sandstorm. But I figured
Sandstorm.
Dr. Jones would know a lot about sandstorms, so we'll cover that a different time.
All I know is
I'm going,
come on, chicky, put the chickies up, because I'm afraid the chickens are going to blow away.
They'll blow away,
Just get inside and stay put is what they recommend, I think.
Don't breathe a lot.
Yeah.
And I'm on the horses and chickens in the coop.
Well, I have this picture of me evacuating my place with my husband, we'd have, you know, 12 chickens and 2 horses and 2 dogs, a cat. It would be chaos in the pickup.
All right. Thank you, guys. We really appreciate you being here at thehorse.com and floridaequine.com. Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
She lives in a deserty area. Maybe they don't have haboobs up there.
I guess
in
not.
Northern
she'd, part. Never, she'd never heard the word.
It haboob. Must be a Phoenix thing. You guys have haboobs all to yourself.
Dude, I'm not kidding you. I was riding Joey out back on a trail ride, and I look up, and it was like a wall of darkness. You know, it's like the never-ending story. The nothing is coming. Yeah, the nothing was heading my direction. And so we trotted back. You know, they don't move super fast. They kind of, like a, within itself, it destroys everything, gets everything dirty, but it doesn't move super fast. We trotted back home. I put all the chickens away. I ran and got everybody's fly mask because I already taken them off because it was after their dinner. And I put all their fly masks back on, and I turned them out. And I was like, you guys are on your own. See you later. I'm going inside. Bye.
You know, it must be weird with the first haboob you experience. It must seem like the world's coming to an end because there's just blackness coming at you. The Bible, you know, it's just the end of the earth.
Yeah, no frogs falling from the sky or whatever it says in the Bible. So I haven't been too terribly worried, but just a big old dust storm.
All right.
There you
just
go.
Just checking. All right, we have to get out of here. Thank you very much for joining us, everybody. It's been a fun morning. Thank you to all of our guests, and thank you to Colbert and the dressage community for continuing to provide us topics to talk about.
Absolutely. And everybody, remember. Oh, you dropped out for a second there, Glenn. Remember, everybody, spay, neuter, and geld. Make that appointment. Breed responsibly. Don't breed.